Welcome into the FWFB Football Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. Got a great show lined up tonight. Two really great guests. I got first Jeff Ratcliffe from Pro Football Focus, then later on Brandon Gadula of Number Fire. Two guys who I'm very interested in talking to about coaching changes, and that's our topic for this podcast. Joining me now, Jeff Ratcliffe of Pro Football Focus. How's it going, Jeff?
Fantastic, Mike. The preseason is here. It's football. Football's in the air. You know, when we get to August, it gets that smell in the air. I always used to, as a kid, it's like, this is hitting weather. And I guess it's hitting weather for fantasy football. And I fired up. Love this time of year.
Yeah, this August heat takes me back to two-a-days. We would go up to Bloomsburg University, and it's a little cooler up there, you know, but it's still unbearable at times.
Oh, yeah. Pennsylvania summers are no joke.
No, sir. We're going to talk coaching changes tonight. With Jeff, we'll focus on the AFC. When Brandon jumps on later, we're going to focus on the NFC. You can get all of our work at friendswithfantasybenefits.com or at Fantasy Benefits on Twitter. And then later on in the show, we will announce our listener league. And just to tease it out a little bit here, it's going to be a new format that I came across. Saw Scott Fish talk about it. And I think the original guy that kind of came up with the idea was Tom. What's his last name? Tom Degenerate of, I forget who he's with. But the essential part of it is the vampire, who would be me, doesn't get to draft a team. He can only steal from you. But we'll get more details on that later. You got to listen to the whole pod to find out more. Jumping over to coaching changes, though, Jeff, you guys are Pro Football Focus, pay obviously very close attention to the intricacies of the NFL, and when you're playing fantasy football, it's definitely true that you're not necessarily just drafting the jersey, the guy on the team. You're drafting the guy in the system. So when you have a new coach, you don't really know what you're going to get in a lot of cases. And this is a great time of year to figure out if you can get an edge in your upcoming drafts for new coaches who may have more productive offenses or less productive offenses than you may be expecting. And the first one that I'm interested in, and I think this is going to be a breakout offense for 2018, is the Tennessee Titans. You know, Matt LaFleur coming over from the Rams. He's been in systems with Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan. It's a great situation, I think, all around. You look at their offense, there's not really one weak spot in that entire offense. They've got a good O-line. They've got plenty of receiving weapons. They've got two good running backs. Marcus Mariota, I think, is a solid quarterback. He also can do a lot with his legs. You on the same page as me there that's a great situation for a new head coach?
Yeah, I am completely on board with that. And you mentioned it. I mean, maybe you're underselling it a little bit. I mean, the dude was with Kyle Shanahan in 2016, which is one of the best offenses we've seen in recent memory. He was with Sean McVay last year, which Sean McVay polished the proverbial. He made a team that really kind of looked like crap the year before look awesome. And, yep. He's also, he has the Mike Shanahan influence. So, we know that system has been very successful. Obviously, Kyle kind of taking it to the 2.0 version, but a lot of other coaches using it. And I think when you look, there is a fair comparison to be made. You have this boring Rams team that now becomes exciting. Well, you had this boring. And by the way, let's just get this out here. Malarkey never said exotic smash mouth. Like, that wasn't a quote from him. He said smash mouth. He said somebody once called it exotic and then the media ran with it. Right. So either way, it was boring. It was boring. As the kids like to say, it was boring AF. Okay. And now you get LaFleur in here. This is going to be exciting. I'm 100% on board with you. Not to mention LaFleur was part of the staff that made RG3 look good in that lone year. He was on that staff. So you can use Marcus Mariota the way that he needs to be used. You have, like you said, the stable of running backs. You have a potential breakout wide receiver in Corey Davis. You have maybe underrated tight end in Delanie Walker. I know it's weird to say like a top six
every
fantasy
year
tight
he is,
end.
Though.
Yeah, every year. And last year, I know, okay, three touchdowns. Touchdowns are so overrated for fantasy purposes because they're not as predictable as the other stats are. And the guy saw 11 end zone targets last year. So I expect to see an uptick in touchdown productivity. So I'm 100% on board. Plus you get Vrabel in there to run the defense. They have some talent on the defensive side of the ball. So it's going to be a really interesting team.
They're one of the defenses I'm interested in that's got to change it as well. Yeah, there's some talent there, and they got beat up in the last two seasons. But, you know, I wonder how much of that is coaching. I think their scheme had just – the NFL had passed it by. The zone blitz has kind of come into its conclusion. You know, there's a few teams out there who can still pull it off. But
you need a freak to be able to pull it off. You need a guy, an edge rusher who's – capable of dropping back into coverage, and they don't make those very often. You know, they don't make the James Harrisons of the world very often. You know, another thing we got to note too is zone block or the RPO concepts that everybody was talking about last year. They're not new. Like, we saw Mike Shanahan using RPO in RG3's rookie year. And when you think about what that does for a defense, I mean, it puts the defense obviously on their heels when your offensive line is run blocking on those plays, and then it's a passing play. I mean, you're all discombobulated. So there's going to be a lot of interesting wrinkles. I even heard an interview with Delanie Walker where he said, "Hey, this is exciting stuff." And you know, when the players are fired up and when they're buying into it, it's just going to translate on the field.
Yeah, and Delanie scored 7 touchdowns the year before, so I don't think that's a long-term issue. I would expect him to have 5, 6, maybe again 7. There are a lot of mouths to feed there in Tennessee, but there's not a high price on really anyone in that offense, partly because you're not sure who's going to be the man in the passing tree in the rushing game. But, I'm interested in basically all of their assets, as well as, you know, if you don't know which one to pick, you can just take Marcus Mariota and everything runs through him.
Mm-hmm. Big time breakout potential there. And it's just another great example why you don't have to draft a quarterback early.
Yeah. And I threw this out on Twitter a little while ago, but the Titans were one of the lowest percentages of 3 wide receiver sets last season. And the Rams were one of the highest. So I think that kind of also speaks to the conservative nature of Malarkey's play calling and what they're going to get coming in here. And that could breathe a little life into a dynasty favorite, Taywan Taylor.
Yeah, absolutely. You get him on the field. I mean, he'll be occupying the slot a lot, but you get him on the field, it's another mismatch. And we can't undersell, you mentioned the 3 wide, we can't undersell what that does for the run game as well. Todd Gurley went from widely panned as a fantasy bust, even though that term I think was overused in 2016, to Todd Gurley, right? And the difference was he saw loaded boxes in base defense in 2016 in a predictable vanilla offense. And then last year, he basically almost always saw nickel and dime defense. And I mean, you're going to dominate against defensive backs when you have those extra defensive backs out there. So we could see that for the Titans. The tricky thing, though, is who's going to get the carries from week to week? Because we know Deion Lewis, even though he's a little guy, you know, quote unquote little guy, he can run well between the tackles. So it's going to be tricky. That's why I found myself fading both of those guys. I'll let somebody else take them. I know there's breakout potential with Derrick Henry, but I think it's going to be frustrating from week to week.
Yeah, I'm pounding Deion Lewis in best balls just because I know the NFL season will sort itself out, and there's going to be weeks that he's going to be super useful, a little easier in that format. But all right, then moving on here, Cleveland has a new offensive coordinator in Todd Haley coming over from the Steelers, and I don't believe he's fought anybody yet in a bar in Cleveland. At least it's not been reported, but you know, he's, for all of his friction and personality that he brings with him, he knows how to produce an offense. And Pittsburgh's, you know, they were obviously up there every single season at every position. And the Browns have plenty of potential.
They do. I don't know if they currently have the right quarterback for a Todd Haley offense. That's the problem. You know, it's a vertical offense, stretching the field. They have, if Josh Gordon is back, if Antonio Callaway is on the straight and narrow, they have field stretchers. Jarvis Landry, by the way, Hard Knocks. I mean, he's already the star of Hard Knocks, and boy, does he look, they're making him look awesome. So hopefully that translates. I mean, we know he's great, but hopefully that translates. But that's my biggest concern, because I think when you ultimately look at it, is Baker Mayfield a good fit in Todd Haley's offense? Yes, absolutely. I think he's a great fit. Tyrod, not necessarily. Tyrod has a maybe underrated deep ball, but he doesn't take chances. That's why he never throws interceptions. Right. So I don't know how well of a fit there is there, at least in the short term. But you have to admit, like, the Browns are trying to do things to shake things up, and I like the direction they're going.
Yeah, I do wonder at this point in Tyrod's career if his OC is telling him, you got to push the ball downfield, if he'll actually just say, you know what, I'm going to do it. Doesn't matter if I throw interceptions. This is probably my last stop as a starter if I don't pan out. But yeah, and Jarvis Landry, I think he can play the outside a little more than people expect. They're talking about doing that. He's a great athlete. You know, he did what he was asked to do in Miami, and that was run short routes, and he did it extremely well. It's always crazy when people hold that against him. But yeah, so that's an interesting spot. And in that same vein, you know, he created a vacancy in Pittsburgh. Randy Fitchner, the quarterback's coach, is taking his place. So do you expect any changes for Pittsburgh, or is it just same offense, new play caller?
I do expect a little bit in terms of changes. I don't think much is going to change in terms of the concepts, but I think that ultimately the key is we're going to see more up-tempo and no huddle, which is something that Haley was sort of reluctant to use with Ben. That was sort of the rumblings. Rumor mill said that was one of the major disagreements between the two, because we know they weren't always on the same page, even though the offense really produced. And we have to look to Fichtner's history. He was the OC at Memphis in the early 2000s, and that was sort of pre-widespread spread offense, like spread offense being widespread at the college level. But yet he was running that type of an offense there. That was D'Angelo Williams when he put up all those gaudy numbers at the college level. Fichtner's is off OC there. So I think, if anything, we could see more up-tempo from the Steelers, which, when you have one of the most potent offenses already and then running more plays, maybe this is the year where Ben bucks the trend of, oh, Ben can't put up numbers on the road. Maybe that reverses a little bit this year. And I love that people are generally down on him. I mean, we forget he was the number two fantasy quarterback over the last eight games of the season last year. Only Russell Wilson had more fantasy points than Ben Roethlisberger. Now, they did have a lot of home games over that stretch. Right. So, I mean, for what it's worth. But still, you look at the talent. Antonio Brown, not worried about him. I just watched Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, it was a broken play from Landry Jones. It was a flag. And but Juju still went up, high pointed the pass, and caught a 70-plus-yard touchdown in the preseason. Yeah. And then James Washington, with what he brings to the field, you have all of these guys who can get vertical. You have speed. You have Le'Veon Bell, who we're not even talking about. Right. Vance McDonald potentially giving you some speed up the seam. This is really intriguing, and especially if they're going to run more plays in this offense.
Yeah, you know, I like Juju. I just worry he's maybe a little overpriced as a guy in a slot role. And, you know, historically, it's hard to produce touchdowns out of the slot. There's guys who have done it, but, you know, the ceiling is usually like five, maybe six touchdowns out of a slot guy. And, you know, I wouldn't say overdrafted, but you're kind of paying his full freight where he's going right now. Do you think there's any more ceiling than that? Does he see the outside a little more, anything along those lines?
Well, he'll be on the outside and too wide, at least. I mean, the question is, how much too wide do they actually run? Right. Which is probably, you know, they're going to be running a whole heck of a lot of three wide. They're not going to be running like New York Giants 2016, 2017, 95% three wide, but they'll still be up there. And I agree to, you know, to some extent, when you look at his current ADP, he's mid fourth round, but he's going ahead of Allen Robinson. He's going ahead of Demaryius Thomas. He's going ahead of even somebody like Golden Tate, who doesn't produce touchdowns, but in a PPR, you know, he has 90 plus catches in each of the last 4 years. He's going ahead of Jarvis Landry, who we just talked about. So it isn't Marvin Jones, who was a wide receiver one last year. Juju's going way ahead of him.
Yeah.
So I agree. You are paying a premium. I'm not going to necessarily completely talk somebody out of taking him in that range, but I'm not going to take him in that range. I think I'm more comfortable early fifth round on Juju.
Right. And then, you know, you mentioned James Washington. Do you think he has any kind of role? We've seen obviously what Juju did and Martavius Bryant. This offense has been able to support other players in past seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's the best ball special right there. You know, it's weird for a guy who goes out at the combine and runs a 4.5 that you think he's a field stretcher who can take the top off a defense, but he's different in pads. I was really surprised that it was a 4.5. You know, not that that's slow by any means. I mean, there are a lot of successful receivers in the NFL who run 4.5, but that just wasn't what you thought of him as, you know, at the college level. Yeah. But he steps right into that role. And when you look down the depth chart, there really isn't anybody else who's going to do that. Darius Hayward Bay is not really going to do that. Justin Hunter, I mean, we've been down that road so many times in fantasy. Eli Rogers is a slot receiver. So whoever rounds out this roster, if Ken Griffey Jr.'s son makes the team, which probably won't happen, but I think it's perfect for Washington. He'll have a few big weeks, but then he's going to have a bunch of weeks where he doesn't do a whole heck of a lot, which is frustrating when you're in redraft season long leagues, not best ball. That's the one knock that I have for him. So I'm probably not looking at him there, but I do have some shares of him in best ball.
But yeah, I mean, Ben does not mind just loading up, putting the ball out there. And that's where Washington's, you know, at his best. He's thick. He's beastly. He'll outwork a corner. So some late round potential. All right, then moving to Oakland, the Raiders. Obviously, there's a lot going on in Oakland these days. John Gruden coming out of retirement. They've brought in Greg Olson to be the OC. You know, do you even have a good projection, a good feeling on this one? What can we expect there?
I don't know what to expect. It isn't unprecedented in NFL history for a coach to take this much time off and then come back and have success. Dick Vermeil is the prime example of that. I think he took a decade and a half off too from his earlier coaching career with the Eagles and then eventually going to the Rams. And he had even that stint with KC as well after that. Yeah. It's going to be a West Coast offense. We know that. Spider 2, wide banana. We know that. We know that they want to run power, but they hired Tom Cable. So, yeah, I mean, Tom Cable, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Are we really, we're going to run power with a zone blocking guy? Like one of the zone blocking guys? All right. I don't know entirely what to expect, but I do at least know this, that everything that we've heard about that team, especially last year, is that behind the scenes, it wasn't good. And Gruden's going to run a tight ship. So if anything that straightens out, that should be favorable for Derek Carr. We've already heard very positive things about Amari Cooper, which the drops thing was overblown, by the way. For fantasy, that's the worst metric, by the way. I hate when, oh, he drops a football. Okay, yeah, so does every freaking receiver ever. You know, Jerry Rice dropped footballs, right? Randy Moss dropped footballs.
Crabtree dropped, I think, more balls in 2016 than Cooper did, and Cooper was the one who had the knock.
Yeah, but he had the one really bad game, and then that skews all the numbers. It's just a terrible metric. So he looks good so far. I think the running back situation is not going to be fun for fantasy because Marshawn was good last year. He just didn't touch the ball enough. And if Doug Martin is, you know, I guess this would be the year, right? Because Doug Martin had one good year, two bad years, then one good year, then now two more bad years. So this would be his cycle. That's going to be a mess. But if anything, like I said, you know, we kind of know what we're going to get with Gruden from an offensive standpoint. But I think that ultimately, you know, him straightening things out in the locker room is going to be a good thing for Oakland.
Do you think they run the ball, towards one of the higher percentages in the league?
I don't know if they're going to have the right game scripts to do so.
That's a good point.
You know, I'm not 100% sold. Yeah, exactly on that. And especially, I mean, when your best player isn't on the field and who knows if he's going to be on the field, that's the rough part. So I don't think they're going to be one of the highest percentage just simply because of that defense. I mean, you look down the defense and it's sort of like you just cobbled together a defense. Like you got Derek Johnson out there on his last legs. You have like Emmanuel Lamour is going to be a starter for you. Tahir Whitehead, as much as I love my Temple brethren out there, you know, you're relying on this guy for major snaps. I love Carl Joseph, you know, love Carl Joseph, but it's going to be a little dicey there.
Yeah. And then, you know, I pretty much in every best ball I'm in, I own Delaney, I own Jordy Nelson. He's just getting zero love, and, you know, ninth round, I'm okay with taking the chance that maybe it was just that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is the Green Bay offense. And when he went down, so did the offense. And there's a chance that Jordy's not terrible at football. Yeah. And if he's not, getting him in the ninth round is a huge steal.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it didn't seem to affect Devontae Adams' numbers, though. There were only two wide receivers who had double-digit touchdowns, and Devontae Adams was one of them without Aaron Rodgers for a bulk of the season. I love the reports about Jordy, though. It's like, he's running like he's 29 all over again. It's like, we can't go any younger than that. We're not going to give him 25.
Right.
But, you know, a buddy of mine from Roster Watch, Byron Lambert, was out there, and he said, hey, the reports are real. He does actually look quick. Mm-hmm. So if anything, that bodes positively, plus the fact that Martavis, you know, this was coming from Greg Olson, that he's not really picking up the offense very quickly. I mean, Jordy should be on the field a lot.
Yeah.
And you're right. When there's a value breaking point for everybody, we're not drafting Jordy Nelson from 2016.
Yep.
We're drafting Jordy Nelson now. And in the ninth round, I don't mind it. In the sixth round or seventh round, I'm not comfortable with it, but you're right. Ninth round, that's fine. And the volume, it should be decent enough. I mean, he's a number two now, but we know he's a red zone guy. We know he's a guy who gets on the same page with his quarterback and really, you know, gets that mind meld going. So, yeah, I don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I like that you brought up that he looks quick, because we brought this up a few shows ago. Josh Hermsmeyer's site, airyards.com, has the NFL game speed on there. And, you know, his game speed last season didn't look much slower than prior years. So, yeah, everybody's kind of just assuming he lost a step because he didn't produce, you know, fantasy wise, and that may not be the case. So, you know, I'm trying to not invest him at this point, but he's just there in the ninth and I can't help myself.
It just shows you this year, value is everywhere at wide receiver. It's nowhere at running back, but it is everywhere in the draft at wide receiver.
All right. Sticking in the AFC West, the Broncos have a new OC, Bill Musgrave. You know, it seems like they're probably going to be a pretty conservative offense. They, you know, that's how they've want it to be. The defense is how they want to win the game. Do you think it's kind of, you know, the same offense that we've seen the last couple of years, or is there any new wrinkle here with Musgrave?
I don't know if you're going to get much of a new wrinkle with this offense. I think ultimately the nice thing is they should have some more stability at the quarterback position. Now, the thing about Case Keenum, I'm always cautious when it's 1 year and it's 1 year in a system that has produced good, really good quarterback play. Like, we saw an elite level completion percentage out of Sam Bradford, and really a career year out of Sam Bradford in that exact system the year before. So I'm a little cautious, but it's more stability than they've had. They obviously have the talent at wide receiver. It's really nice to hear that Cortland Sutton is performing well immediately and kind of has just taken that number three job and said, this is mine. Royce Freeman at running back, I think he ultimately does blow by Devontae Booker and is a true three down back. Now, whether they view him that way will be interesting, but I mean, he had over 1,000 touches at the college level. So I don't know if it's going to be that much different, but you know, some of the players that you have in place can potentially move this team in the right direction. I'm not overly bullish on any of these guys, though, for fantasy purposes. The only guy who I keep finding myself taking is Freeman, but he's more of a third or fourth running back option in fantasy. And it's still at that point a little bit of a lottery ticket because his role isn't solidified just yet.
Yeah, I kept finding myself getting Emmanuel Sanders very early in best ball season, but his price has risen. People kind of remembered that he's been reliable in years that he's not injured. So that value's drying up a little bit. All right, moving to Indy, the Colts obviously cleared house. They've got a new coach, Frank Reich, new offensive coordinator, Nick Sirianni. You know, a lot of uncertainty with. What's Andrew Luck going to look like? You know, Luck has you know, always performed well, even on terrible teams. So even if this team is bad, and barring that he can still throw a football, you would expect him to be, you know, top 10, maybe top five quarterback, right?
Definitely top 10, potentially top five. If he's luck of old, then maybe top three, to be honest with you. And we could just be completely bamboozled by the whole thing. I mean, a lot of people look back to last year and the fantasy pundit said, hey, draft this guy, just stash him. Even if he's on the pup, it's still worth it. And yeah, that didn't work out very well because the team wasn't forthcoming. And now he's on the field and he's throwing the ball and it's an actual NFL football. So that all bodes positively. And then you talk about the system. I mean, Frank Reich, he's never been the play caller per se. He was the OC last year. He was the OC with the Chargers, but wasn't really calling the shots. Mm-hmm. But he's going to take some of that influence with him. Like, he's going to take the influence of Doug Peterson and that offense. And then you got to expect that the influence of his playing career. I mean, this dude was in the K-gun. Yep. So, yeah, hurry up. No huddle. I mean, with Andrew Luck, I mean, isn't that – when you think of, like, in the NFL right now, who would you want running that type of an offense that's going to push the ball downfield? I mean, Andrew Luck's got to be top three on that list, right? So, yeah, it's pretty ideal. And I just really hope that Luck's ADP – it's starting to creep up. We did a staff mock draft. And obviously, when you're talking industry folks, then sure, it's going to be a little bit higher. But even in the industry where people don't want to draft quarterbacks, he went in the eighth round, which I thought was really telling, because I've seen him consistently in the 10th and 11th round in industry mocks. So maybe that momentum's starting to build a little bit, and we'll see what happens through the preseason. But I would love to continue to get him as the 10th quarterback, 11th quarterback off the board.
Yeah, definitely. As he actually plays real football, people are going to remember what Andrew Luck can deliver. And T.Y. Hilton, I think he's a good bet to produce like he has previously. You know, not his 2016 numbers, because that was a career year, but you know, at home, he's always reliable. He's streaky because the home road split, but do you think this offense is going to support a wide receiver too, or even a tight end? You know, they brought in Ebron. I don't know what his role's going to be. You know, Luck has shown a little bit of a rapport with Jack Doyle previously. What do you like out of that bunch of secondary options?
Yeah, it's tricky because Ryan Grant's probably going to be the number two. We could see Deion Kane, who's like a quintessential Clemson wide receiver. Yeah. I mean, buzz, but buzz for football and buzz for fantasy, right? They're not always the same thing. And that's what I feel like with Kane. I love Kane in Dynasty, but he's a Clemson wide receiver. He's an upside guy, right? I think ultimately, you know, T.Y. Hilton, well, first of all, we know that with Luck, he's a wide receiver one with borderline elite potential. Without Luck, he is a boomer bust back end wide receiver two. So two different players, right? You mentioned Ebron. I mean, he's the number one fantasy tight end in the fantasy playoffs last year. I know it's a 3-game sample size, but I'm going to hold on to that one for dear life. And I also have to bring up the fact that tight ends in the NFL do not peak until around 26, 27. I mean, look, over the last couple of years, we've seen some of these guys. Kyle Rudolph broke out in his age 26 season after a couple of years where he disappointed people. Zach Ertz broke out last year, 26 years old. It happens over and over. And I'm not saying it's the perfect formula, but Eric Ebron's still 25. You know, a lot of people forget how young he was when he entered the league. And there's a lot of pressure on these young tight ends, but Rob Gronkowski doesn't happen every year. Evan Ingram wouldn't have happened last year unless all of the Giants were injured, which is basically what happened. And he was the only guy on the field. So I'm still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I do think we see both of these guys. I think we see a lot of Jack Doyle and a lot of Eric Ebron. And so ultimately, T.Y. Hilton leading the team in targets, and then either Ebron or Doyle 2 and 3. And then after that, it's Grant and whoever ends up being a number three, if it's or Deion Kane or whoever. And then we're going to see running backs out of the backfield, Nyheim Hines potentially catching balls as well. So it's going to be interesting. The cool thing, though, is there's going to be a lot of meat on the bone. If Andrew Luck's out there, you got to figure, and this isn't the best defense, he's going to toss the ball 600 plus times, right? Yeah. You know, like, it's I'm fired up. I'm going to be very excited if he's fully healthy.
Yeah, and I like that you brought up the two tight end potential, because both the Chargers and the Eagles are systems that ran some of the top percentages of two tight end sets. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think they brought him in to replace Doyle. They brought him in to complement him.
Exactly.
All right, then the Jets. This is an interesting one because Jeremy Bates is now their offensive coordinator. And I've kind of, you know, obviously I'm not plugged in, but the feeling I've got is people think Bates was actually behind their 2017 success. And, you know, there was some bad blood and all that. And they just said, you know what, you're our offensive coordinator and you know, we're moving on. Do you get that feeling?
I heard some rumblings there. I mean, Jeremy Bates has a very interesting story. Maybe, you know, someday this becomes a movie because this guy, I mean, he was once considered one of the hot names. Like he was, you know, maybe the next big thing. And then there were a couple bumps along the way. I mean, he was the OC in Seattle in 2010. And Pete Carroll, who always gives everybody a reasonably long leash, it was just 1 year after he was fired. He was fired after the one season. And he didn't coach for 4 years. Like, he's just out of the league. So coming back last year, and you're right, that was a team that a lot of folks pegged as this is going to be the worst team in NFL history. And they weren't, you know, they weren't great, obviously, but they weren't absolutely terrible. They were an NFL team. They were not
My projection on them was way off. I think I had them winning one game.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of folks did. And so they outperformed that, which you got to give a lot of credit to. And, you know, we're seeing a theme here. There's some of these coaching trees that now, you know, are all over the NFL. And this is a Shanahan coaching tree. I mean, he was with Shanahan in Denver back in 2008. So West Coast zone blocking. I feel bad because that the widespread perception of Isaiah Crowell is that he's not very good, and he's actually really good. I like what Isaiah Crowell has done over the course of his career. The guy cannot help that he played on a team that won one game over the last 2 years. Last year, more than a one score lead, the Browns had that on three snaps the entire season. The entire season. That's it. So all those game scripts were terrible for Crowell. And now he's not going to get the best on this team, but at least he's going to be the lead back. And I think it's a favorable system for him.
Yeah, he's getting no love. And, you know, I don't think he deserves a ton. But, you know, when you're desperate for a fourth, fifth running back, he's not a bad name.
Sure, he's always going to be available.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, so before we let you go, pick a sleeper or two on one of these teams that, you know, is going to get a boost from the new coaching that people can get late in the draft and could make a difference for them.
All right, so let's see. And we didn't even do Buffalo, by the way. Real quick, Belichick. All right, there we go. There's Buffalo. I'm not going to give you a sleeper out of Buffalo. So, I mean, hey, I think that Rishard Matthews is kind of interesting because he's another one of those guys who nobody talks about, and all he does is go out and play decent football, and it's a favorable system. So, yeah, he stands out to me.
Are you worried about him at all not being on the field right now?
I mean, it's the preseason, so I'm not overly concerned, and you don't have to pay a premium price on him, so... And you know, that's all the way I view those late round picks is, you know, hey, you're going to end up cutting guys anyway, so I might as well shoot for upside with those picks instead of taking like safe guys. So, you know, I'm not really too concerned. We talked about Cleveland. I think that in Cleveland, David Njoku, who scored a touchdown, so now he's not going to be that much of a sleeper anymore.
Spike.
But he's interesting because tight end is absolutely terrible this year. And potentially Callaway, if Gordon doesn't get on the field, Callaway could be intriguing as well. Otherwise, I mean, you know, I think we hit on most of like the big name guys throughout everybody who we talked about here. So those guys probably stand out the most to me.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, tell people where they can find your work, find you on Twitter and all that good stuff.
Sure. So it's a laundry list, profootballfocus.com, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. That's on That Other Pregame Show, which airs on Sunday mornings, 8 to noon Eastern time. So check us out if you have that cable channel. At Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter, Jeff Ratcliffe on Instagram, Jeff.Ratcliffe.NFL on Facebook. There you go.
You're everywhere, man.
Yes, and, sir.
Yeah. If you guys aren't listening to Jeff's show on Sirius, it's one of the better football shows. You know, you get into real meat of football analysis, and not just, you know, here's a name and, you know, a little bit of buzz and no real substance. So it's definitely one of the things I queue up in the Sirius on demand.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's the objective. I don't want to be a fantasy guy who says, start this guy because I say so, right? Who the heck am I, right? Give your reasons. I want to talk about football first anyway. This is just really, fantasy is just an excuse for my football obsession. So you're going to get the real football on the show for sure. So thank you, man. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks for being on with us, Jeff.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Take care. So thanks again to Jeff Radcliffe. Some good stuff on AFC coaching changes there. Jumping on with me now, Brandon Gadula of NumberFire. Going to talk the NFC. How's it going tonight, Brandon?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. Always ready to talk about the NFL. It's always great. Seeing some of these preseason highlights gets me back in the swing of things. And we always put in a lot of research in the offseason, so it's good to start putting it to use.
Yeah, a lot of buzzy players doing some stuff tonight. Juju, David Njoku, some backup quarterbacks that people have an eye on. It's heating up. Football's going to be here.
Yeah, Saquon Barkley's first touch was at 39 yards or whatever. Yep. I saw guys got banged up and had some nice runs. I saw.
Yeah, so it's going to make things interesting. Drafts are ADP is going to start moving for sure.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, we're talking coaching changes, and we're going to kick it off in the NFC North with Chicago. You got Matt Nagy coming over from the Chiefs, bringing in Mark Helfrich from, well, formerly of Oregon, and at the college level. And, you know, that kind of speaks to Nagy wanting to run an offense that's going to definitely up the pace at times. Is that your expectation?
You know, I'm actually expecting the pace to be kind of slow with Chicago. You know, we may think that they're going to go run this, like, you know, up-tempo, go, go, go sort of offense, but it's not exactly what the numbers suggest. The Bears were 31st in seconds per play in 2017, according to Football Outsiders, and 32nd in the NFL in situation neutral pace. That's the stat that I prefer to sort of look at when trying to project out pace rather than just seconds per play, because that doesn't let us know how a team, you know, if a team was trailing, trying to go up tempo just because they were, you know, 14 points behind. But the Chiefs under Andy Reid and Matt Nagy in 2017 were 30th in seconds per play and 31st in situation neutral pace. So, you know, you factor that in, that's going to be a bit, you know, kind of guide my assumption there. But also, Mitch Trubisky has gone on record to state that the offense is a bit more complex than he's used to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with that buzz of the offense getting faster, you know, that's one thing, but that does require great knowledge of the offense, no real kinks. And, you know, they're almost assuredly going to have to slow it down early while the offense clicks. It's, you know, not only the new coordinator, new coach, but Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller and Trey Burton. This is their first year with Trubisky. So I actually kind of think that their pace is not going to be fast. And that could be a bit of a detriment for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my concerns with the Chiefs. You know, that's they're a very deliberate offense. So, you know, it could carry over here to the Bears. I just found it interesting that he brought in a guy who's known for that. But, you know, I think you're probably on the right track, and at times they're going to employ that. But like you said, it's going to be dictated by game script, and you know, their defense isn't awful. You know, that's the one thing I'll give John Fox credit for, is he can build a fairly talented defense. So.
I mean, again, they could come out and, you know, run, but we'll learn that if that offense is capable of doing that. We'll learn that in week one. And, you know, we can't, you know, adjust our season-long teams for that, but in DFS, if we know that the Bears are up-tempo, we can take advantage. So it's not going to take long to see if they can click like that, but you know, I'm just a bit skeptical that they're going to come out and just, you know, run this no huddle flawless offense.
Right. And the one thing I'm interested in, and this was pointed out by Warren Sharp, is that the Bears, they barely used shotgun last season, despite, you know, Trubisky having a lot of history in the shotgun and Jordan Howard having a much higher yards per carry out of the shotgun. And, you know, with the Chiefs, they ran a lot of shotgun, a lot of RPOs. You know, it's very trendy right now, but it worked for them. And most of that comes out of the shotgun. So, you know, those are things that could speak to success for both Trubisky in the passing attack and Jordan Howard or Tariq Cohen in the rushing attack.
So, especially, I mean, Trubisky's athletic enough to take some heat off of the backfield. I think Jordan Howard needs that, you know. So, it, again, you know, I'm not necessarily down on the offense. I'm not quite as high as some people might be. I actually did a study on Number Fire about just receivers who change teams, and they kind of have trouble sort of having a ceiling. So a bit worried about, you know, Allen Robinson being the Allen Robinson of old. So, you know, I think that there are just reasons to be skeptical, but, you know, I can definitely see other reasons for that optimism.
Yeah, there's a lot to be determined in that offense, especially at receiver with Anthony Miller coming in, being drafted. They brought in Taylor Gabriel, Kevin White still around. So, you know, targets could be in flux week to week.
Yeah, that's another thing. You know, we just don't know how they're going to go. We've heard talk that, you know, Jordan Howard is a three down back. We've heard talk that Tariq Cohen needs to be more involved. So, you know, I always just approach every situation as if I don't know anything, because I'm not Matt Nagy. You know, I'm not figuring out, you know, I have no say over who should be used. So I don't want to get overconfident. And I think that's just kind of how I approach fantasy football, is just don't assume you know everything, because you don't. And you can be a great judge of talent, but if your player's not getting the ball, it doesn't matter how good he is. So you just have to be able to react and be just aware that we don't really know exactly how an offense is going to go.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of unknowns in Chicago. Okay, moving on to the New York Giants. You got Pat Shurmur, the new head coach, and Mike Shula being brought in as his offensive coordinator. That one was kind of surprising to me. You know, Shula has been around for a while, and he's not really known as being necessarily a trendsetter or somebody that you want to go out and get to make a splash with. But the Giants are a fairly conservative organization. You know, Shurmur's been around a while, so obviously he had some trust in Shula. Most people are projecting that to be a fairly balanced attack. Do you think, is everything going to improve for the Giants? And then everyone, basically besides Evan Ingram, who just was the only person to be available for targets last season in the passing attack, is it going to mean everyone is getting better, or that, you know, everyone is going to have a slightly more capped upside because there's not as many targets to go around, as many touches to go around?
So with the Giants, we'll start in the backfield with Saquon Barkley. We've seen Shurmur give, you know, a guy like Steven Jackson 75% of carries back in St. Louis, back when Steven Jackson was a workhorse running back. But, you know, when the talent dictates, you know, if he needs to, he'll use a committee. But, you know, given the talent and draft capital, I think that we can expect Barkley to push for, you know, 70 to 75% of the carries on the ground among those running backs.
That's huge.
And that 75% cutoff was met by just Ezekiel Elliott and Le'Veon Bell last year, just for some context. Yep. I think Barkley's fine from a rushing standpoint. But, you know, the Giants are projected for 6.5 wins. They're actually favored in just 3 games. If you look ahead at some of those lines that are available for all, you know, 16 weeks of the regular season. And, you know, Shurmur's willing to pass when trailing. That's evident in the numbers. Does so around the league average rate whenever trailing by at least 8 points. And that comes from 4 for 4's TJ Hernandez. He has some great research on play callers heading into 2018. So from that perspective, the volume should be there, which not necessarily great for Eli Manning because efficiency matters more than just passing volume for quarterbacks, but it is good whenever you have so many pass catchers. You know, as for Odell Beckham, we did see Adam Thielen with a 27% target market share in 2017. So I don't think that we need to worry too much about Beckham's ceiling. You know, you give Saquon Barkley about 13% of those targets for simplicity's sake, and that adds up to 40%. Then we're down to 60% of the passes to split between Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard, and the rest of those guys. You know, logic dictates there that Engram and Shepard can still get about 18% of the targets. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not great, but it's certainly not bad. 20% is kind of the cutoff where you're, you know, like a week in, week out stud. And, you know, it's not unrealistic that they get close to that. So, you know, just to sum that up, I think Barkley and Beckham will still have elite usages with enough for them to funnel kind of a usable share still to Engram and Shepard. And I think it's all going to come down to what Eli Manning does with those attempts.
Right. And I think the situation is great for Eli. He's super cheap in best ball drafts. You know, even in your season long, if you miss out on you know, some of your early targets, wait on quarterback is obviously the in fad, but you can get sniped still. You know, you might have been planning on getting a guy like, you know, let's say Matt Stafford, and somebody takes him and now you just don't have a backup plan. You can wait till the very end and get a guy like Eli for free, and I think you'll still be okay most weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's one route to go for sure, especially if you're in like a 10 or 12 team league, one quarterback. I mean, there are about 20 to 22 usable quarterbacks whenever the matchup's right, and you can definitely take advantage of that position scarcity, that, you know, the sort of supply and demand of quarterback in a one quarterback league. And Eli Manning is definitely on my list whenever I'm in those you know, shallow quarterback leagues, and I'll just play the matchup with him, and if we find out that he's not getting it done, then, you know, we suck it up for a week and then we just kind of don't go there. But with all these targets, you know, he definitely can have some fantasy value in the right matchups.
Yeah. All right. Heading up to Detroit, Matt Patricia being brought in from the Patriots, and they're going to retain Jim Bob Cooter, their offensive coordinator. So, you know, people are just assuming that, you know, the offense isn't going to change at all. I'm curious how much of that will hold true, because Jim Caldwell is a very conservative head coach and NFL play caller, in my opinion. Matt Patricia, you know, we don't know anything about his offensive tendencies, but I would hope that he learned the best lesson he could from Bill Belichick, and that is to trust your offensive coordinator and let them dictate, you know, who should get the ball, how fast the offense should run, because the Patriots are one of the things their offense is best at is going up tempo or slowing the game down when they need to. So do you think that that's going to be the case? Patricia's going to kind of say, you know, JBC, here you go, do your thing. Or do you think he'll have a little more influence?
Well, I mean, I think I saw a quote from Patricia saying that, you know, Jim Bob's the guy and that he liked what he was doing. But, you know, I think that there might be a kind of a narrative that Patricia tries to, you know, slow things down, run the ball a lot. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to be really the case. You know, Detroit's just had struggles running the ball for years now.
Yeah, no talent there.
Yeah. I mean, according to NumberFire's metrics, just 33% of Detroit's rushes increased in expected scoring in 2017. That ranked dead last. If you adjust for opponents and look at, you know, opponent adjusted expected points gained per rush, they were 31st in the league last year. And, you know, according to research from Jim Saunas, who's at NumberFire, the Lions were, they were good with Taylor Decker healthy. They were not so good with when he was hurt. Running to the left last year, they succeeded at about a league average rate of 43% on the ground in terms of, you know, improving expected scoring. Without him, that fell down to 29%, which, you know, is really, really bad. Detroit did draft a center in the first round, and investing early draft capital in the offensive line generally does lead to improved efficiency. So I think that they could pull that off if they really wanted to, but you know, they still don't have a great offensive line by any means. It should allow them to run the ball a bit better, or at least, you know, not quite as terribly. And you know, they've kind of just taken the sort of taken the air out of the ball, not really throwing it deep. So I do think that maybe this offense is just going to be, you know, short passes and some carries whenever they can, and then some of those deep shots to Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay.
Yeah, they definitely sent out some smoke signals by bringing in LeGarrette Blount, drafting Kerryon Johnson, and drafting Frank Ragnow, you know, kind of an interior a bully. So I do think they will run the ball more. A lot of people are kind of not on that same train. They're saying, you know, the offense is going to be the same. They're going to throw the ball a lot. That's because they couldn't run the ball, like you pointed out. So I think they get, you know, their total run percentage has been in the 30s the last 3 years, which is ridiculously low. I think they get back into the 40s, you know, the low 40s, closer to league average. So I think you got to be careful with targeting some of their passing game options and not overpaying for them.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, is that there are three legitimate receivers in that offense. You know, I don't really know who's going to be the guy. I'm kind of drawn toward Marvin Jones just for that big playability. Of course, if you're in PPR leagues, Golden Tate, probably the guy. And as excited as I want to get about, you know, Kenny Golladay, goes back to that. Whenever I don't know, I'm going to assume that I don't know. And so, like you said, I'm not going to overpay and just assume that I know how this offense is going to go. The targets just might not be there for someone like Golladay. So I'm inclined either to just go with Marvin Jones and Golden Tate at their draft costs. You know, Galladay's fine if he slips, but probably just not an offense that I'm going to invest in a lot unless it is Matt Stafford. I really do like him this year.
Yeah, and Galladay's only going to get buzzier as the preseason goes, because you know, he's already making plays in training camp, and once it's against opposing teams, that's gonna drive his price up. And, you know, like I said, you just don't know, so it's hard to pay for him if he gets any more expensive in draft capital.
Yeah, Galladay's always good for some preseason plays. Yep. I'm sure he's gonna score some touchdowns.
Babytron.
Yeah, Babytron. So,
all right, then going out to the desert, Arizona Cardinals, they have a new head coach, Steve Wilks. They brought in a new offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy. Wilks is a defensive guy, so you know McCoy should be running the show. And one of the hallmarks of Mike McCoy's offense is, well, there's two that I'm interested in for fantasy. One is that he spreads the ball a little bit. So I'm kind of curious if Larry Fitzgerald will get the same incredible volume. You know, obviously he's one of the only names they have at wide receiver. He is their playmaker, but yeah, he got targeted last season and the season prior at you know, a ridiculously high rate. So do you think that Larry Fitz is going to still see that kind of volume?
So using ffstatistics.com, you can see that Mike McCoy's wide receiver one generally gets about a 22 to 23% market share. Larry Fitzgerald is going to be their number one, but you know, a 22-23% market share is not fantastic, and that does come with some concern for sure with Fitzgerald. But this team shouldn't be very good. They should have to throw a lot, and so the difference then becomes 23% of a team that's winning and doesn't need to throw the ball, or 23% of a team that's trailing a lot needs to throw up toward the league average in attempts. So that's the big difference. And that's, you know, one thing that can get lost in target market share is sometimes the volume is just, you know, different enough that's a pretty big shift. You know, it's a bit of a tangent, but like it just comes into mind that the Bengals ran like 920 plays last year, and they really skewed the league average, and that can happen. But, you know, I don't think that's going to be the case for the Cardinals. If anything, they're probably going to be forced into being sort of pass happy, which is kind of what Mike McCoy does whenever it's a neutral game script anyway. So I do think that the volume will be there, even if the target market share kind of isn't for Fitzgerald. So I think I'm back in for at least one more year with Fitzgerald. Eventually, it's going to come back to haunt us, but probably not this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I think he starts the year not getting targeted nearly as much, but if nobody steps forward in that class of receivers they have, that there's not that many exciting names, it may revert back to just targeting Larry. But like you know, if his target share goes down into the low 20s, he's looking at 20 or 30 less targets total, and that's a giant chunk.
Yeah, it definitely is. That's definitely something that you need to know as a risk. But again, they could just have to throw a lot, and that might make up for it. He also could sort of outproduce the average, you know, target market share from a Mike McCoy, you know, lead receiver. But David Johnson is healthy. Hopefully he can stay healthy. We know that he can get, you know, close to 18, 19, 20% of the targets. And I think you make a good point with who's behind him that would force him to have Fitzgerald. I'm talking about, you know, who's behind him who's going to make Larry Fitzgerald have just a 23% market share. Christian Kirk apparently doing some things. Bryce Butler's never been a high volume guy. Ricky Seals-Jones, we can get as excited as we want about him, but he plays so few snaps, doesn't really draw a lot of targets. So, you know, Fitzgerald, I can easily see the case for him keeping that volume and not really being problematic at all. But I can definitely also see that case where they just try to spread the ball around. He's getting older, you know, eventually, like I said, he's going to, you know, not pay off that draft cost. But I really don't think it's this year.
All right, then the second thing I'm interested in from a Mike McCoy offense is a pass catching running back, because he has shown in the past he's very happy to target running backs, and they've got two that can do it. Obviously, David Johnson, you know, he's on record as saying he'd like to be, you know, one of the running backs who gets 1,000 rushing yards and 1,000 passing yards. That's a crazy thing to do as a running back, but you know, he was kind of on pace for that at different times in his career, and you know, it just hasn't worked out. It'd be hard to do, but it wouldn't surprise me if he pulled that off.
No, and I mean, he might have to if the tertiary options behind Johnson and Fitzgerald just don't step up. You
can easily see 100 targets in this offense.
Yeah,
that's crazy for a wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, if this team is kind of as bad as that, you know, some people might think, that's going to lead to a lot of negative game script and a lot of dump off passes to David Johnson, who can do some things in space. And, you know, that doesn't make for, you know, super efficient numbers, but from a fantasy perspective, doesn't matter if it's a 20 yard catch in the fourth quarter that, you know, just moves the sticks for another set of downs. Whenever they're down by 21 points, it still works for us.
Yeah, I have DJ having a very Todd Gurley-esque season in my projections. A lot of touchdowns, both rushing and receiving.
Yeah, it's just going to depend on the talent of the offense if they can get him enough scoring chances. But I do have him projected for over 100 targets, 760 or so receiving yards, and that's just insane to think. Like, I'd be excited with that from a wide receiver.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you're in a PPR, for me, DJ is the 1-1. But then they also drafted a running back named Chase Edmonds, who, you know, he's a little bit of everything, but he's kind of a guy with a slight build, and he's, you know, in college, it's hard to say a guy is a pass catcher because a lot of teams don't, you know, necessarily do that the way the NFL does, but he's got the repertoire to pull it off, and you know, I bring that up because. When Mike McCoy was in San Diego, he went and got Danny Woodhead, definitely utilized him heavily all over the field, even the red zone. Do you think Chase Edmonds can crack the target market here with the Cardinals as a change of pace back?
I mean, I don't want to say that he won't, especially, you know, if the Cardinals just are bad and they don't want to run David Johnson out there and give him 30 touches a game in a lost season. I don't think that he's on really anyone's radar from a redraft perspective. So I don't think that we have to, you know, he's not really going to be someone I draft and stash, and handcuffing running backs is not really a great strategy because we saw it with this team last year. David Johnson got hurt. We all ran, picked up Kerwin Williams and didn't pan out. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not going to draft Chase Edmonds by any means, but he can definitely get things done. And, you know, again, just circling back, if Ricky Seals-Jones doesn't step up, if Christian Kirk's not ready, you know, there's no reason they can't use him out of the backfield.
Yeah. And you know, there's so many satellite backs being drafted really early this year. You know, even young guys like Nyheim Hines in Indy is generating a lot of buzz for, you know, whatever reason. There's guys out there like Edmonds that, you know, you can get him for free. And in a best ball scenario, when you kind of need a fifth or sixth running back, just as a flyer, you know, if you're on MFL 10 and it's a full PPR, it's not the worst roll of the dice.
Yeah. And again, just, you know, if David Johnson does get banged up again, or they kind of just have a lost season and don't want to run him out there, then Edmonds should be the guy who can kind of produce the most out of that backfield.
Yeah. Okay. Going to Minnesota, the Vikings had to replace Pat Shurmur. They went to the Philadelphia Eagles and took quarterback coach John DeFilippo. And being an Eagles fan myself, you know, we've brought up DeFilippo on this show before. He's the real deal, I think. He's worked with a lot of young quarterbacks and had some really great results. He's getting Kirk Cousins, a guy who can definitely be efficient in an offense. You know, they've got all the weapons there. Their offensive line is a bit of a question, especially when it comes to pass blocking. That may be my only concern in Minnesota. But on the whole, they had such a good 2017 season. You know, all of their guys felt like they hit their ceilings, and that's just so hard to do in the NFL. Do you think that, given that what happened in 2017, you know, we can expect something similar in 2018?
Well, you know, I'm high on this offense overall, but I did read something today that kind of made it sound like Kirk Cousins wasn't quite, you know, super comfortable. And I don't want to put too much stock into that because they still have fantastic assets. I love Dalvin Cook. I love Stephon Diggs. I love Adam Thielen. Kyle Rudolph is someone I'll have a lot of if I'm, you know, ever in that position to take a tight end in the middle of the draft. But, you know, that you mentioned that offensive line, that is definitely a concern. All three of their interior linemen are hurt. And,
yeah,
you know, I think sometimes we can get a bit overconfident in knowing how much an offensive line will impact an offense. But, you know, when your center and both your guards are out and you're not a great line overall to begin with, that's definitely something that we need to take into account.
In 2016, their offensive line was garbage. And
yes,
you know, give them credit for patching one together in 2017 and getting the results they did. But I could easily see it reverting back to that 2016 form.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't protect your quarterback, if you can't generate anything on the ground, I mean, it doesn't matter how great your running back is. You're just not going to be able to produce a ton if you can't open up any space. So
I hope they get it figured out, because I just drafted Dalvin Cook in draft with Giants 4, Andy Singleton's mass league, which has been a ton of fun so far.
Yeah, I love me some Dalvin Cook, and you know, I actually have him ranked pretty much in that same tier as, like, it's just the bottom of the tier of Barkley and Kamara. I'm a bit higher on Cook than I am on like Kareem Hunt and Leonard Fournette, just from a volume perspective and an offensive upside perspective. But I'm getting a little bit nervous about that offensive line.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, though, they're an offense that wants to run the ball. You know, you look at their tendencies, and you kind of throw out the year that they had, you know, Adrian Peterson get hurt, and it was Matt Asiata and Jerick McKinnon as a change of pace, and that's just not a good combo with a bad offensive line. They ran the ball 49% of the time last year, 51% of the time in 2015. I mean, that's 5% above league average in general. You know, a big part of that is the defense. You know, when you're in a positive game script, you can afford to run the ball. But I think the carries are there. The opportunity is there for Dalvin.
Yeah, I mean, their win total is at 10, which is really, really high for if you're looking just at over-unders. We know that this defense is one of the best in football, so we can definitely expect a lot of positive game script. And DeFilippo, you know, these play callers now in Minnesota, threw the ball 25.5% of the time when up by at least 8 points. That's the lowest pass rate of any play caller. So whenever they do have positive game script, we can expect them just to grind it out. We don't know how efficient or how pretty that will be, but you know, I'm with you. The volume should be there for Cook, but you know, we did see him kind of divvy up touches in 2015 with the Browns. Isaiah Crowad, 204. Duke Johnson at 165. So you mentioned best balls. You look at these deeper leagues. Latavius Murray may not be the worst late round stab.
Yeah, especially early in the season, he might, you know, vulture a couple of goal line opportunities and touchdowns, and you know, even just some percentage of the total carries in general, it could be higher in the early going as they ease Cook back.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned these positive game scripts. If they're up 14 points with, you know, 8 minutes left, they're up 17 points or whatever going into the fourth quarter, they can just give it to Murray and give Cook some rest, because this team's looking like a playoff team, and that does matter for, you know, from a coaching standpoint. Mm-hmm. And as much as we might hate it from a fantasy standpoint, it's definitely within the range of outcomes that Cook's not a big fourth quarter guy. We, you know, kind of saw that with Todd Gurley. Gurley did so much that it didn't matter last year through three quarters, but like, you know, he wouldn't be out there in the fourth quarter, and it'd be pretty rough sometimes.
Yeah, we definitely saw that. All right, and then the last one I want to touch on here, the Seattle Seahawks are bringing in Brian Schottenheimer for some reason. That reason seems to be that they are convinced that running the ball is the way to win football. Is it, you know, are they going to finally run the ball well, I guess is my question.
Well, I mean, Brian Schottenheimer wants to run at eight-man fronts, so no, yeah, they will not run the ball well. I mean, you look at pretty much any study on the analytics, and rushing offense just doesn't lead to wins. It's all about passing efficiency. Even establishing the run in the first half has no correlation. The only thing that has like a lower correlation with winning than establishing the run on offense is stopping the run. The run just does not impact football. So,
yeah, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle was 26th in rushing success rate by Numberfire's metrics in 2017. Their running backs were all bad. Their offensive line's not good. J.D. McKissic was actually the only running back with an above league average success rate, according to Numberfire. You know, like I said, the line's not good already. And I love Rashad Penny. He's like one of the best running back prospects in my draft model since 2000, like top 10, top five caliber even. But they want to give the ball to Chris Carson. You know, that's not only are they going to not win games, their win total is not high. They're not favored in these games, but if they're going to split up carries and the carries are just, you know, these guys are getting met in the backfield, that's just going to be miserable.
I mean, they produced one of the craziest stats of 2017. They had one rushing touchdown from a running back, and that was J.D. Yep. McKissic, who's really a wide receiver. Like,
yeah,
that's insane, yeah, for a team that wants to run the ball. They scored no rushing touchdowns. Yeah, Russell Wilson had three, but it's just insane.
Yeah, that was actually like a 30 or 40 yard run. Actually, right. I made a tweet about that, but like, you know, it wasn't even like a goal line carry. And I actually think I saw on Twitter the other day that the running backs for Seattle like lost 3 yards inside the 10, something like that. It was just abysmal.
You know, when you're not, yeah, when, it's just, when you're entirely crazy predictive, things go wrong.
Yeah, and I mean, that offensive line, like, I'm worried about Russell Wilson. I'm worried about like their ability to win, yep, games, lead in games. So they could be a one-dimensional offense early when they're just trying to run, and then they could be a one-dimensional offense in the second half whenever they're down 14 points.
Right. I mean, they did get rid of Tom Cable, so their offensive blocking scheme should improve. But, you know, Schottenheimer is not, you know, necessarily a forward thinker. So
yeah, I think everyone's excited to see what John Gruden's actually going to pull out when these games start for the Raiders, but I might be most excited to see what the Seahawks do with Schottenheimer there.
Definitely. All right. Then before we let you go, Brandon, give me a sleeper or two from one of these teams that you think is in a spot to help people win leagues late in their drafts.
So a sleeper from these teams, how about Tyler Lockett?
Okay.
While we're on the topic of the Seahawks, I love Lockett. He's had some decent volume around like 80 or so targets. That's just off the top of my head, so I might be off by a few, but he's had targets and they just kind of lost a lot of pass catchers. Jimmy Graham and like half of the team's red zone targets are gone. Paul Richardson had a pretty decent red zone target market share as well. And we've seen Lockett be, you know, an efficient receiver. Doug Baldwin's hurt. That's like, that's problematic. And if we do expect them to trail, Lockett, you know, going deep could be something to just kind of keep an eye on. I'm trying to get Lockett pretty much anywhere I can. Russ is one of the best deep ball passers in football. If he can stay afloat, stay on his feet for, you know, more than a second, I do like him.
Yeah, interesting on Lockett. You know, he obviously he had the really bad leg injury. It was a fibula-tibular break, I believe. And he just didn't have that burst last year. His game speed was not there. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets that back now a full year removed from the injury.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I'm trying to keep an eye on. And look, if Doug Baldwin's hurt, if you know that lingers through the season and Seattle just falls to like 1-5, he might be someone who just kind of sits out some games. And then it's going to be feeding Tyler Lockett, hopefully, and not just feeding these running backs. But I do think we could also keep an eye on Christian Kirk in case that volume does go there. If he does win that second receiver spot in Arizona, he's someone to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, I definitely have him on my radar as a bit of a flyer because, you know, I don't think it's out of the question that they even would move Larry Fitzgerald back outside if Kirk showed the ability to be a good slot receiver.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what they're going to do. We don't know. Again, you know, we don't know. So I want to just assume that, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the room when it comes to predicting exactly how these receivers are going to get targeted. But the volume, I think, could be there because, you know, I'm just expecting the Cardinals to have to pass by trailing. And you could do worse than having Sam Bradford or Josh Rosen be throwing you the ball. So
yeah,
I think that Christian Kirk could have some low-end value in deeper leagues.
All right. Before I let you go, Brandon, tell everyone where they can find your work and find you on Twitter.
Everything I do is up on numberfire.com and my Twitter is Gadula13, GDULA13.
I'm always looking forward to your rushing and passing efficiency pieces that you put out during the season. They make great lineup decision aids and DFS helpers.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for that. I'm trying to come up with some, you know, a few extra things to throw out there on Twitter throughout the season. Try to just put out as many notes as I can too, because you know we sometimes can have too much information, but it's better to have a bit too much than just not quite enough.
All right, Brandon. Thanks for the time. And then before we wrap up here, guys, the listener league for Friends with Fantasy Benefits I'm putting together. I teased it earlier. It's going to be a vampire league. So I mentioned a little bit about what that's going to be. I'm going to be the vampire. I don't get to draft a team. I have to create a team out of waivers. You guys get to draft your teams. If you lose to me in a head-to-head matchup, though, as the vampire, I get to swap one of your starting players for one of my starting players. So as the season goes, I should get stronger and make everyone weaker. Or I might go 0-13 and be incredibly humbled, but I think it'll be a fun exercise. Like I mentioned, I saw Scott Fish put this out. He's always coming up with really fun and creative new ways to play fantasy football. And Tom Kislingbury at Tom Degenerate on Twitter is the one who had originally kind of put the idea out there. So, you know, we'll hash out the details once we fill the league. But if you are interested, I'm going to put it out on Twitter. you can get it there. And I'll probably put something on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits website as well. Just a little post explaining the league. Let me know if you want to be in it. Try and fill it and draft here in the next couple weeks. But that's what we got time for tonight. Thanks for being on, Brandon. Thanks for being on, Jeff Radcliffe. And then may the sports be with you.